We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 127, the second podcast of the week. Scott, we're moving to the new schedule. We thought it wasn't going to be until next week, but the stars aligned. Double podcast for everybody.
Yeah, I got to talk to you again already. What's going on here? This is weird. This is, I guess I got to get used to this. Two a week. We were waiting to see what Justice Sheffield's schedule was going to be like this week, if we could get them before their season started, and it worked out. So after you get me and Andrew for a little bit, you get some Justice Sheffield talk. So look at that. Starting off with a bang.
The new schedule for the entire season will be Mondays and Thursday episodes. So it was Tuesday all off season, but we're going to go to Monday and Thursday. So make sure you're subscribed in iTunes and Google Play and all the other places you get your podcast, because they will be twice a week. And I actually think that works out really well. It's kind of right after each series, the way it falls.
Yeah, and Monday is, you know, traditionally an off day as well throughout the season. Not every single Monday, but Monday is traditionally an off day. So you'll get to your Yankee fix when there's no game as well. So it works out pretty well. And I think most likely we'll stick with Mondays even in the off season too. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I'm excited to start doing these two a weeks. I keep wanting to say two a day. It just sounds so much better. But two a weeks, two a week workouts.
I don't think I could do two a day.
No, two a day would be tough.
Last episode, you mentioned the June 10th event at Yankee Stadium. People seemed excited about that. So the details are still being worked on, but everyone get excited for June 10th. That's a Saturday in the Bronx this summer. Bronx Pinstripes will be taking over the joint.
Yeah, definitely. We're gonna be plugging this a lot. Tell your friends, tell anybody you know who's a Yankees fan. We definitely wanna sell out all the tickets that we have. We're working with the Yankees. They give us a great deal on seats, so we're gonna pass on that discount to everybody. And then we're also working on, like I said before, we're working on a relationship with a bar and a brewery in the area. So we are gonna have a pregame party that will be awesome. And then I'm also going to be designing a custom tee for the event. So you're going to get all of that stuff in a nice, neatly packaged price for the event. And yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. So definitely mark that down and set it aside on your calendar.
Yeah, basically you're going to get not only the ticket to the game, but all that extra stuff that Scott mentioned for an unbelievable price. Rate and review the podcast in iTunes. We just cracked the top 100 for sports podcasts in iTunes. We're one ahead of Shaq. I don't know who listens to that Shaq podcast, but suck it, Shaq, because we're ahead of you. Thank you to everybody who is rating and reviewing the podcast. It's clearly working. So if you have not done so already, please go and give us a 5-star review. It is extremely helpful, and we always enjoy reading them. So, Scott, what a difference one game makes. Isn't it funny that the Yankees look terrible on opening day, and then they look great in their second game, and then we're sitting here on Wednesday before the game, and I cannot wait for it to start.
You can't wait to watch Chase Headley play. I know it. That's what you're excited for because the constant for the first two games has been Mr. Chase Headley, who's just been unbelievable. Comeback player of the year potential. I mean, leading the charge.
It's never too early to make that call.
This is exciting news. He actually hit a freaking rocket over the center field wall. That was pretty good. Pretty nice little exit velo there.
I think it was the first ball that he hit hard all season.
I'm pretty sure it was directed at you. Everybody keeps saying that he's listening
credit
to the podcast, and I think he's answering directly to what you are saying, and I like it. And I also announced that my new dream guest for the show is Chase Headley, because that would be awkward and amazing all at the same time.
Something tells me that podcast, that he would find out somehow that I hate him so much before he comes on that podcast. But
that's
I'm
okay.
taking credit. I'm taking credit for Clint's turnaround. Chase's turnaround, Clint.
Oh, you don't even remember his name. You don't even remember his name. How disrespectful.
Well, because we're going to talk
carrying,
about,
he's
we're
carrying
talking about Clint
the
Frazier next.
Carrying the Yankees.
Headley, I mean, I'm taking credit. Clearly, he listened to the podcast in the offseason. That's why he was so motivated going into the season, to not only to beat the shift, but actually hit the ball hard.
Hey, good for him. He's looking at all avenues to improve. So, I'm proud of Chase Headley. He's not only the nicest guy in the world, but he's the Yankees' leading player right now. Good for him.
You know who seems like the nicest guy in the world based on everything we've heard and from the interview we just did with Justice is CC Sabathia, who is the dad of the clubhouse, pitched 5 innings, sweat 5 gallons on the mound, but he gave the Yankees kind of what he was giving them all last season, which is a performance, especially with the Yankees bullpen, that's good enough to win ballgames.
Were you holding your breath in the 5th inning as I was?
Yeah, a little bit, but I mean, it's still early in the season for CC, so I know that's why he was probably like if this game was in the middle of June, I think that Girardi lets him go past whatever it was, 80 pitches or whatever he was at.
Well, you know, it's been the 5th inning typically over the last year, 2 years, that's really gotten him. Come 5th inning, CC Sabathia gets into
year,
it. Yeah, it's just been one of those. It's been one of those dilemmas that he's got to get past. But no, he did start getting past that last year. The year before that, it was ridiculous. So it was like 5th inning or bust every single time, or 5th inning and bust every single time.
Yeah.
But no, he pitched really well, and they used the bullpen. I think we're going to see this a lot, and I think that's why Adam Warren is such an important role, as well as having Brian Mitchell. You got two guys that can pitch multiple innings. I think these two are going to be extremely crucial parts, because I could definitely see Girardi pulling guys earlier than normal, and I think that's going to be a trend to watch.
Brian Mitchell looked good.
Yeah, Brian Mitchell did look good. I'm excited for him.
I
think he's motivated, too, because he didn't get that spot in the rotation. I think he's definitely got a lot of motivation.
Are you a little surprised they didn't use him for another inning? I thought because that they maybe want to keep him stretched out to potentially take over a starter spot if they need it, that they would have him go two innings. I mean, he breezed through his inning of work.
Yeah, maybe a little bit, but even if they do want to keep him stretched out, you know, whether Joe is going to be using him the next day or whatever, he'll probably do some side work as well just to get some extra throws in. But
get some B-whips in.
Some B-whips, yeah. The eye is killing me. I don't. Well, did we introduce the eye to this? I don't remember.
Well, phonetically, it's BWIP, but that doesn't make any sense. It really should just be BWP.
Yeah,
B-whip. When there's no vowels in it, it's tough to say.
Right. Ballpen, I don't know if we could just add an acronym, add a letter to the acronym, though. Just
well, you
got to
ignore
need...
that you drop the I.
Drop the I, yeah. But no, he pitched well, and I do. I think he's got a lot of motivation right now because I feel like he thinks he deserves that rotation spot. But you know what? You know, you're going to hear from Justice Sheffield in a little bit talking about, you know, the role he'll play in New York and whatever it is. And obviously he wants to be a starting pitcher, but then again, whatever the Yankees need him to do, he's going to do. So that's obviously the mentality for Brian Mitchell. And you got to love that. That's the kind of guy you want, the kind of guy that will go out there and do whatever he needs to do for the team. So
our boy Tereas with the first home run kind of got the Yankees off the schneid. Jumped on the first pitch, crushed it actually, with Judge on ahead of him on the bases. The two of them pictured together is one of my favorite things about this Yankee season is just watching Judge and Tereas interact with one another.
It's really good. It really is. I love the fact that his nickname is Toe. It's just, I don't know why, Toe and Judge. It's perfect. And the fact when they go home plate and do the high fives or the 10. I mean, the dude's got to jump and Judge's got to come down. The pictures really are priceless. They're really good.
Yeah. Well, it was a great win. It's obviously great to just not lose ball games anymore. So we're recording before the Wednesday game before Big Mike takes the mound. I feel like every start that we go in this season with Big Mike is going to be which Big Mike are we going to get? So obviously, as you guys are listening now, we know which Big Mike we got, but it's something I'm looking forward to. All right,
and it's not just start by start, by the way. It's which Big Mike's going to come out for this inning. That's the problem.
Exactly.
We don't know which guy's coming out per inning. That's where the inconsistencies lie. They're not even start to start. They're within the game of every start almost. So,
per pitch.
Yeah, the dude is he needs to lock it up. He needs to lock it up.
A couple other news items before we get to the interview with Sheffield. The Gleyber rules that we talked about on the last episode are actually 3 days at shortstop, 2 days at second base, 2 days at third base, and then a day off. So he's on an 8-day rotation. Everyone is dubbing it the Gleyber rules, similar to the Jabba rules. But hopefully these will not derail Gleyber's career like they derailed Jabba's career.
Yeah, it's a little different when you're just switching around on the infield. You're still playing, and you're still doing pretty much the same things. So I don't think this is really going to affect him too much. It's going to be good for him because I think he's the exact guy who can go out and make the adjustments. I think he's going to shine at every single position. He's definitely got that in him, and we all know what he's like in between the ears. The dude's mature beyond his years. He says the right thing all the time. He does the right thing with training and you know, talking to the right. He was working out with Omar Vizquel in the offseason. So he's definitely the right guy to make these moves.
Yeah, Justice Sheffield called him the best shortstop that's ever played behind him. And we also got a little bit of breaking news on the Gleyber wedding that might not actually be a wedding. So tune into that. Because I know you and I were texting back and forth that interesting for a 20-year-old to get married. But he might be getting married soon. We don't know.
Yeah, that was it was when I saw that, I was like, come on, man. Come on, buddy. Let's slow it down.
Clint Frazier cannot seem to avoid criticism.
You know, I really do believe he's got a red target on that head because everybody is going after him. Everybody is
very
going
punny,
after
Scott,
him.
Very punny.
The now it's Susan Waldman. I mean, nobody. You're not safe if Susan Waldman's coming after you. You're a glutton for punishment at that point. He's talking about how Clint Frazier was mentioning that he was asking about Yankee numbers being unretired, leading to the fact that he wants to wear number 7, which obviously is Mickey Mantle. You know, This is what I think happened. Again, I am completely dismissing any of this crap. I think that the kid has some sarcasm behind him. He's a little bit of a jokester, probably said this in jest, and it was taken seriously by Susan Waldman, and that's what happened. I guarantee it. There's no way he's going in there dead serious. Like, yeah, unretire the number. We've talked to him. He's not like, he did not come across as that type of guy. He's a guy who was talking about grinding, making his own name, doing these things. He's not the dude that's going to walk in and demand Mickey Mantle's freaking number. It's stupid. It's ridiculous.
It's like how Boomer Wells wanted to wear number 3. So he went out and got Babe Ruth's hat and put it on, took it out to Yankee Stadium Mound. But there's no way I believe that Frazier is that stupid to actually think that they would unretire a number. So I totally agree with you. He had to have been joking. And Susan Waldman, we've talked about the old curmudgeon baseball reporter. I mean, there's no more traditional baseball reporter than Susan Waldman. She doesn't handle that kind of shit. So of course she's going to get upset about stuff like that. But there's absolutely no way that Frazier was serious about unretiring the number. And if he wants to wear number 7 so bad, maybe he'll wear number 77 or number 16 or number 25 or anything like that. Because you remember, that's why Mark Teixeira, I think, wore number 25. Or maybe it was Jason Giambi wore 25, because 2 + 5 = 7. And he was a huge Mickey Mantle fan. There's other ways around it where you don't have to actually wear number 7.
Yes. So Clint Frazier, again, is just he can't talk, because I think when he opens his mouth, people are now looking for something to write about. They're looking for something to criticize, and it's really unfortunate. And I really do hope it does not, you know, affect his career, because, you know, if you just keep getting hit and hit and hit, a la Roger Maris in 61, that was you know, you see what it could do to somebody. You can only take so much after a while. So it's unfortunate.
Yeah, Waldman basically told Beningo and Roberts on WFAN on Wednesday the same stuff that George King wrote about Frazier and how he needs to grow up and that he put on too much muscle and that they didn't see the bat speed. So I don't know. The whole, I'm sick of Clint Frazier criticism, and he's still in AAA. So he's
and hasn't played a game and had a pretty good spring.
Yeah, he's gonna have a bullseye on his back. That's just, hey, that's the territory he's entered, being traded for Andrew Miller, being an outgoing guy, being red hair, being muscular, being all those things. So whatever. It's just going to annoy me. Final thing before we get into the interview. Apparently Syndergaard said that New York is a Mets town, and maybe it was a Mets town for October of 2015 when they were in the World Series. But the only people that will say, oh, New York is a Mets town, not a Yankees town, is someone on the Mets or a Mets fan, because they have the little brother syndrome. You don't see a Yankees player going out there and saying, no, New York is a Yankees town, because it is a Yankees town and we know it. And that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, if you got to say it, then why do you have to say it? You're saying something to try to drive a point home that nobody knows or believes. So I don't know. I yawn at this. I dismiss it. I go and I drink my champagne when I think about the championships, and I sit back and realize how amazing the New York Yankees are, and the Mets fans have absolutely nothing to talk about. So it's fine. It's
all
fine.
Right. Let's get into the Justice Sheffield interview. It runs about 35 minutes. So enjoy that interview, and Scott and I will be back at it. Recording Sunday, episode on Monday. Talk to you guys next week. Okay, we now welcome on Justice Sheffield, pitcher for the Yankees. Justice, thanks for joining the podcast. I hear you are on the bus right now. You guys are traveling somewhere?
Yeah, we're traveling to Erie right now. We got about 5 hours left, so in for the long haul.
That's different, yeah, taking the bus. That's a five-hour trip. That's a long trip. What are you guys doing to keep busy for 5 hours?
Usually just chilling, hanging out. I know a lot of guys just, you know, try and sleep through it and whatnot, or, you know, just listen to some music. So
nice.
You looking forward to those plane rides so you don't have to sit your ass on a bus?
Yeah, definitely looking forward to it, man. I've been on the bus for, what, three years now? So, you know, I think I'm already up to the point where I don't have to share with anyone. So, you know, got that one out of the way. Now we just got to move on to getting up in the air.
Oh, yeah, you're at the status where you get your own row of seats, right? You get to lay out.
Yeah.
What do you have to do to get to that status?
My first full year, I had to buy my seat. You know, I was bunked up with Bobby Bradley, and you know, he ain't no small dude, so I definitely was trying to buy my seat, and had to, ended up getting that. But then you know, now on long trips, I guess in AA, we take two buses, so you know, enough seats for everyone.
The buses, what's the bus situation compared from the Cleveland organization to the Yankees organization? Are we stepping up in buses at least?
Oh yeah, I mean, we got outlets. That's the number one key. Ooh, as long as we got outlets, I'm happy. Outlets at my own row, I'm good.
How about Wi-Fi? Is there a Wi-Fi connection on that thing?
There's Wi-Fi, but you know, it goes in and out all the time. So
yeah,
you know, I usually don't get on Wi-Fi, which in the long run kills me because I always get text messages from my moms complaining about the data usage and stuff. But you know,
well, tell her you can pay her back once you make it to the big leagues.
Yeah, she understands. I tell her it's a grind on the bus, man. I cannot be using my phone, especially on these long trips.
Yeah. You download any movies or any TV shows or anything like that?
No, I'm not a big like movie watcher on the bus. I listen to some music. I'll sleep a little bit, but most of the time I'll just FaceTime. I like to FaceTime a lot with you know, a lot of other people, and or just chill with the teammates, try and pass time that way.
What's on the playlist?
Kodak just came out with a new album, so you know, I've been on Kodak. Drake, you know, he just dropped his new album not too long ago. I listen to a lot of hip hop, but I mean, it varies depending on my mood. You know, sometimes if I'm in the weight room or anything, I'll listen to hip hop and stuff like that, and then I got a little R&B joints, so I mean, it varies.
So we know about when batters have their walk-up music going up to the plate. Do you guys pick the music when you're warming up in between innings, or when you're first coming out for the first inning? Does that ever happen, or you guys just completely get left out of that?
We have before, but I think Trenton uses the Thunder song. I think it's by AC/DC. Which is warming up, but you know, this year I asked them if they could, you know, play a little bit of our music, so maybe we can get that in there, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, AC/DC isn't exactly hip hop.
It's kind of hard to get in, it's for myself to get into the zone, listen to AC/DC, but you know, I guess it's you know, I'll try and talk to them and see what they have to say, see if they can't change it a little bit.
So you're starting the season in AA, but the weather in the Northeast kind of put a delay on your season. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, we're heading up to Erie right now, so we'll see. They said it's supposed to snow, but yeah, I'm not really looking forward to that. I'm a person who likes to be in the heat. I don't like the cold too much, but you know, I guess it makes it better. Hitters don't want to be out there as much as we do. So, I mean, I guess the pitchers have the advantage in the cold.
You're not scheduled to pitch in the snow, are you?
Actually, my game is scheduled on Friday, and they said that it's supposed to snow on Friday. So I don't know what that's about, but I'm going to have to work through it, I guess.
Have you heard about Major League Baseball trying to – I think they hired Rawlings or somebody, one of the ball manufacturers, to make a tackier ball. Have you heard about this?
Really? Yeah. I haven't heard of it.
I haven't heard about that. I guess what they're trying to do is they're trying to get rid of the illegal substances in the game. Because usually, you know, when it's a cold weather, then, you know, pine tar or whatever, just to get a better grip on the ball, that's mm-hmm. been used in the past. But I guess what they're trying to do is use a tackier ball so that it's not an issue. Because, I mean, even in cold weather, the pitchers, I mean, it's hard, I can imagine, to, you know, to get that ball coming off your fingertips like it would if it was a nice hot day.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to it. I mean, like you said, when it's cold or, you know, rainy or something like that outside, then, I mean, it gets kind of tough, you know, trying to break off a slider or something like that. So, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to it at all. But that's the first time I've heard of it.
Yeah, the good news is it gets pretty humid in the Bronx in July and August. So that hopefully won't be an issue for you pretty soon. Yeah. This spring was your first big league spring training. How was that?
It was awesome. you know, going in there and chilling with all the dudes and meeting everyone. And, you know, I liked it just because I could learn, you know, from CC, you know, Big Mike, Tanaka, watching all those guys pitch and, you know, seeing how they go about their day and, you know, kind of look at their routines and, you know, put their game, instill a little bit of their game into me, what I can use. So, I mean, that was the best part. I enjoyed and, you know, getting familiar with everyone. And so, you know, hopefully in the future when I get up there, then I'm not just going to be, you know, a new face to those guys.
Yeah. Did you kind of feel like the new kid in school because you were traded last season? So this was the first spring training that you've had with the Yankees?
Yeah. I mean, spring training, I walked in and only knew the guys that I played with in high A and double A, and that was it. So, I mean, getting to go through spring training was big. Meeting the rest of the front office and, you know, meeting the rest of my teammates and all the other guys in the organization, that was huge. And then, like I said, this being my first big league spring training, that was also big, getting up there and meeting those guys.
So do you guys kind of stick together? I mean, there were, what, four of you traded, Frazier, Heller, and Fireisen. Was that the immediate click, like you guys stuck together as much as you could and then started venturing out?
Well, I mean, they – you know, Heller he went to the league, and then Frazier went to AAA, and then JP was in AA. So, you know, we were all spread out. So, but it was weird because when I did come over, I was chilling with Rashad Crawford and Glaber a lot. So, I mean, the other two dudes that got traded with the Cubs. So, yeah. I mean, I guess you could say we chilled because we were in the same boat a little bit. But, you know, after about a week, we just kind of all gelled in with the rest of the team.
Speaking of Gleyber, I want to ask you about him because he is the Yankees overall, their farm system has been getting a lot of notoriety lately, but he has been sort of the most talked about prospect. What do you see out of him as a player?
I mean, he's anything that you hear, that's Gleyber, you know. He's as good as advertised. I mean, he's probably the best shortstop that's ever played behind me. And for him to only be 20, I mean, you can tell he's very mature, you know, on and off the field, and just overall good dude. You know, I love being around him. He's me and him, we've gotten pretty close since we've came over. We knew each other in the past 2 years, just playing against each other. So, you know, coming over, that was good to talk about, you know, me striking him out and then him hitting home run off me. But nah, but it's been good. He's you know, he's a great player.
So you say he's only 20, but what are you, 21?
No, I'm 22. I'm 20 also, but
oh, you're 20 also. So yeah. What the hell are you talking
about? I'll be 21 in May, but you know, he'll be 20 this whole year. So, I mean, that's pretty much like I was last year.
So are you also ready to get married? Because we just saw that he got married. Did you guys at least get to throw him a bachelor party?
Nah, see, I guess it wasn't like his wedding. I guess he was like an engagement ordeal type thing.
Oh,
breaking news.
I think
they're
going to get married for sure in like December or something like that is what he told me. I don't know for sure if that's it, but yeah, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to going out to Venezuela and, you know, kicking it with the groom.
Definitely.
You mentioned CeCe earlier. We had Ben Heller on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and he kind of said that CeCe was sort of like the dad in the clubhouse. Did you get that sense in spring?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. Him being kind of like the older vet, you know, he's been around the game so long. I mean, he's been through it all. So, I know for me, I got pretty close with him, you know, on and off the field, just learning from him and, you know, chilling with them off the field. So that was good. You know, especially we kind of have the same background, both being left-handed, both coming over from Cleveland. So that was an automatic, you know, connection right there off the point. And then, you know, as far as on the field, he was open to any questions, you know, I have for him. But, you know, CeCe's cool. I like CeCe a lot. I'm glad I got to spend time with him this spring.
He's got a couple pounds on you, though.
Yeah. Yeah, he does got a few pounds on me. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, and even though like you're totally different body types, you can still sort of talk about pitching and how you attack pitchers, I assume, attack batters, I assume.
Oh, for sure. And you know, CeCe, he's pretty athletic, even, you know, being that he's, you know, a bigger type body. I mean, he's still pretty athletic, but yeah, just more so attacking hitters and things like that. So,
I think I've been following on you on Twitter, and it seems like you and James Caprellian are also been pretty tight.
Oh yeah, Cap's cool. That's my boy.
You guys seem to be maybe for the two highest prospect pitchers in the organization, and I'm assuming you're sick of being called a prospect at this point. But do the two of you sort of have a healthy competition going on who can maybe make it to the major leagues first?
I don't think it's about making it to the league first. I think it's more so just competition day by day. And we've talked about that. Us being so close, as friends, obviously we're going to pull for each other, but then again, it also comes to that point where, I'm not going to root against him, but when he's out there and if he shoves, I'm going to want to do that times two, which is going to do nothing but make us better. And I feel like make the team better in the future. If we have that type of mindset of, everybody wants to be that number one guy. Everybody wants to be the man, wants to have the ball in their hand. So, I feel like that's the mindset that I look at it. And I know he looks at it like that too. And, I think it makes it better us being friends and tight because we kind of have that same understanding.
So you have a good relationship with Caprellian. But when you look around, I mean, it's extremely obvious. I mean, everybody's been talking about it. Heck, you even have, I know, a Rebuild the Empire t-shirt because I sent it to you. Do you do you guys look around and actually, is this starting to go into your conversations about, like, we could make this next step. We're the future of the Yankees. We could do this together. Is this part of the conversation when you guys are playing and when you're on the bus or whatever?
I feel like at first it was, yeah. But now it's just to the point where we got to go out and play. Now we got to show it. It was well advertised, and still being well advertised, through social media and things like that. So, but now it's game time, season starts, and now we got to go out and show the people why they think that we are going to rebuild the empire with this young group that we got. And, that's the way we look at it. We just got to go out there and do what we got to do on the field.
So I want to ask you about when you found out that you were traded from Cleveland to the Yankees last summer. Were you surprised, or were you kind of keeping an eye on the trade deadline, knowing that your name could be thrown into some deals?
I was surprised that it was to the Yankees, just because, I was kind of keeping up a little bit, watching ESPN and on Twitter. My phone was blowing up with, all these rumors and whatnot, and I actually thought I was going to be in the Brewers trade with Jonathan Lucroy.
All right.
Ended up not being in that deal. So I was like, all right, we good. Like, I'm going to go to sleep. I got to pitch tomorrow. Like, I ain't even going to worry about it. And then I woke up to a phone call saying I got traded. So, I mean, that was a surprise of who I was getting traded to. I kind of knew that it was a possibility. But then, there's no feeling than when you actually get the call and it actually happens. Because, I had to tell all my boys for 3 years over at the Indians organization, that I wasn't going to see them for a while. So, I mean, that kind of sucked at first, but then again, getting traded over to the Yankees, that was, I think that's the best thing that's happened to me so far in my career.
Well, I know, I think I read somewhere that you were a Red Sox fan growing up. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually a Red Sox fan. I remember watching them in the World Series. So it was just kind of, we just kind of loved watching them play, but it's kind of funny coming over to the Yankees because I didn't really like the Yankees too much growing up, which is funny. But I'm all for them now. I mean, I kind of have to be.
well, how the hell did that happen? You're from Tennessee. How you become a Red Sox fan?
Yeah, like I said, just watching them in the World Series. When they had Johnny Damon, Big Poppy, all those guys, and. I remember just sitting up late at night watching it with my pops and my brother, and after that I just loved watching them play. I've been to a few Braves games just because that was the closest place to go, but there was no other feeling than watching the Red Sox play. And when I thought of baseball, that's that's what team I actually thought about, you know, the Red Sox. So, you know, it's just one of those things. And also, I have a, I got a cousin. Well, it's actually my, I call him my uncle, but my cousin, he got drafted, Tony Sheffield, in I think 99 by the Red Sox. Made it, never made it to the big leagues, but
you got some ties there, though.
Yeah, yeah. So
you're talking about your family. You guys would watch the games together. I know your brother is also a pitcher in the Dodgers organization. Were you guys just growing up just a big baseball family? Was that, was baseball life for you guys year round?
Actually, we also, me and my brother also played basketball and football growing up. I never really fully liked baseball until probably like ninth, tenth grade, to be honest. I always, like, I would always go out and, you know, play basketball, shoot hoops outside in my front yard and stuff like that. So I was always big on basketball, and then I knew basketball ran into baseball season, so I had to give that up. And then, you know, I love football more than I love baseball also, but I'm, you know, obviously not that big of a guy, so I had to.
Well, just one day did you figure out, like, oh, I could throw 93 miles an hour, maybe I should try and become a professional baseball?
Yeah, I think it was when I was starting to kind of get college letters. Then I was like, all right, maybe I should just take the smart route here. You know, I might be actually pretty good at this thing. So,
yeah, less injuries down the road, too.
Exactly, exactly.
So you and your brother were both pitchers. He's a right-handed pitcher. You're lefty. So You've got actually an advantage there. You ever talk about that with him, or is he jealous that you're a lefty?
You know, if you probably told him that, he'd probably laugh and say whatever, he's better or whatnot. Because, you know, we're only 11 months apart, so we've been competitive since we was young. So, you know, if anybody says I'm better than him at anything, he's definitely going to deny it. it's been good just because I think that's where we get our competitive edge, growing up so close to each other and, you know, wanting to be better than the other one.
So who's the family back in Tennessee rooting for if it's Dodgers versus Yankees and both Sheffield boys on the mound?
You know, it's gonna be half and half. You know, my pops and moms might be wearing a Yankee hat with a Dodgers shirt. So, you know, there's definitely no favorites there. I know that for a fact.
So your brother went to Vanderbilt, and from what I read, you committed there also. Was there a big part of you that wanted to go to college, or how did you weigh the decision not to go and go straight into the pros?
It was a huge part because, like I said, Jordan, he got hurt his senior year, so we didn't really get to play with each other his last year. So, you know, there was definitely a lot of talk about us going to school together and going to college together. He was actually – I feel like I actually drove him to go to Vandy. He was committed to go to Tennessee. He wanted to go to Tennessee. I wanted to go to Vandy ever since I was a freshman. So, you know, he decommitted and then went there. And, you know, that was the plan for us to go to school there. And, you know, but I just had to go on my gut, go on my heart. And, you know, it was definitely a tough decision. But, you know, I feel like I made the right one in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to turn down being drafted in the first round.
it's tough.
So what was it? What was draft night like?
Wow, nerve-wracking. I can tell you that. I couldn't stop moving. That whole day, I had to be doing something. But, it was good. And, you know, we didn't have, like, a big party until, like, the next night after we knew for sure where I was going. But, you know, I had all my close friends and family with me. So, you know, that was a special day, you know, having them with me and being a part of that with me.
You know, so how'd you find – go ahead, Scott.
I'm just saying more people should take that route. There are so many times when they get – you know, the TV cameras are there. The dudes are, like, waiting to get drafted, and then nothing happens or they drop. And then that footage lives on forever. The way you did it, that's – you got a sure thing party. You got a big celebration. That was smart.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I didn't want to go into it with my hopes, you know, too high. And I had a good fallback plan, you know, going to school, going to Vandy, going there with my brother, you know, best baseball school in the nation. So I was cool. just because I knew I had that to fall back on. But yeah, I didn't want to get my hopes too high, but I feel like we did it the right way. And you know, a couple years later, my brother did it the same way. So, you know, that's pretty cool how that worked out.
So there was a rumor going around, and I'm not even sure how this started, but that you were related to Gary Sheffield. And was that just a product of people being stupid and they saw that you're both named Sheffield and that you play baseball as well?
Yeah. Well, that started like when I was younger. It started when I was like real young, but then it really, really, really started, like, got in the newspapers when I was a freshman and me and my brother came up to bat. He led off and I came after him. You know, we were super late. We didn't even know we was going to be on the lineup. So we get there, didn't even get to stretch, none of that, throw, none of that. Coach puts us back in the lineup. He gets up, he hits a home run. I get up behind him, I hit a home run. And then after the game, or the next day in the newspaper, it was on the front page of some, I forgot who we were playing, but it was their home newspaper. And, you know, it said that, you know, we went back to back and Gary Sheffield was in attendance and that he was our uncle. And I was just like, I do not know where they got this from. But after that, it kind of blew up. You know, I got baseball cards with, you know, he is the nephew of Gary Sheffield. And it's like, man, this is this crazy.
Did you start doing the bat wiggle when you were at the plate?
nah, because then that would make it even worse.
Yeah. So you and your brother, were you guys, I mean, other teams must have just hated you because you must have just dominated.
We was pretty good. It was a good little duo.
Well, because I got some stats on you. I see some stats. You had 2 no-hitters and you struck out 17 in a game. And that's 17 with only 21 outs, because I'm assuming it was a 7-inning game.
Yeah. Yeah.
What happened? You couldn't strike out the other 4?
I guess I, you know, can't get them all. Can't get them all. it was fun. High school was definitely fun. We had a good team, too. We were at one point ranked in the nation my junior year. So, you know, we had a good team coming from a small little school, public school from my little town. I mean, you know, that was big. And we're kind of known for our baseball. So, you know, the times that me and my brother's group was going through, we were pretty good. So, you know, that was fun.
So last year you visited Yankee Stadium or New York for the first time, and you went to a Yankee game. Did you kind of have the visions of walking out to that mound and throwing a game at the mound at the stadium? Was that something that was flying through your head?
Man, it was at first until I went up in my seat. And my nose started bleeding. That's how high we was up in the stands. So
I mean, you should have seen really the old stadium.
Man, I could have literally changed the light bulbs in the stadium if they needed me to. But nah,
Yankees couldn't hook you up like with better those, seats.
It was like one of those last minute things on our off day that me and another teammate Matt Marsh, we just decided to go. You know, take a train up there. I'd never been in the city or been to New York other than Syracuse, New York. So, you know, it was just one of them last minute things. It was still cool to go watch a game. We actually ended up somehow managing to get in like the box or whatever behind the captain's club or something like that behind the home plate. So I don't know how we ended up doing that, but it was good though. But you know, definitely a lot of fun. You know, good experience.
You saw the two different worlds of Yankee fans. Then you saw the 400s, and then you saw the legend seats. So you got both sides of it.
Yeah, for sure. Now I can, you know, make sure I let my parents know what kind of tickets to get.
Yeah, don't put them in the 400s.
Most people listening to this podcast are up in the 400s and out in the bleachers, so it's nice to connect with those people.
Yeah, hey, but you can see everything. That's a good thing. You ain't gonna miss nothing.
So you kind of mentioned earlier that you were watching the Red Sox in that 2004 World Series. Who were some of the other pitchers maybe that you were watching in the mid-2000s that you wanted to model your game after?
The biggest one for me was when I was growing up was Price. I was a huge Price fan. You know, I watched him ever since he was at Vandy.
That may be why you wanted to go to Vandy?
No, that's not the reason. That's not the reason. you know, but for sure he was one of those guys that I like to watch. And anytime he was pitching and I had time to watch, I was definitely watching him. But other than that, I just kind of had my own style growing up. Like I said, I wasn't really a huge, like, into baseball. I was more into basketball and football. So, you know, I had fun playing baseball. That was the thing.
Yeah.
I wasn't really thinking about the future or I didn't even think I was going to go to college or D1. I remember being a freshman in high school saying, my brother was getting looked at by college, and I was kind of jealous. I'm like, man, I hope I get that opportunity. So it was just like one of those things that I did for fun with my friends. And then, you know, and then I actually started liking it and seeing that it could take me a long way. So, you know, I stuck with it. And my dad, he's a pretty smart man. So he kind of made that decision for me. Not really made it for me, but talked me in the right direction.
Yeah, you'll thank him later.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so football, are you a Titans fan?
Yeah, unfortunately. Actually, yeah, last year we had a good year. We coming up.
Yeah.
You know, we finally got us a quarterback. We got a good backfield, and you know, we're coming along, but it's been a struggle for the past decade or so.
Once you escaped Jeff Fisher, then you kind of were going in the right direction.
Yeah, see, they was just holding on to him, you know. He at one point was the man in Nashville, you know.
Yeah, when you were 2 years old.
Yeah, yeah, when we were good, but you know, they hung on to him as long as they could. But you know, I feel like we're going in the right direction now. So hopefully I can get back and watch a few games. It gets a little tough going to the games sometimes. But you know, just so busy and, you know, kind of taking time off, vacation and stuff like that. So
it could be a lot worse being a Titans fan. I mean, you could be a Jets fan and then have to deal with that every single year for your entire life. That is true.
I feel for my New York people on the podcast right now. I feel for y'all.
Well, remember, most Yankee fans are also Giants fans, not Jets fans, unlike Scott.
That's true.
Oh, that's true.
Someone put me in the wrong box when I was a kid. I don't know who did it or why they did it, but someone wanted me to suffer for my entire life.
So you're a starting pitcher, but I've also been reading some things that maybe you could move to the bullpen. That was actually one of the fan questions that we've had. Has that ever gone through your mind, or in down the road that maybe the bullpen could be an option, or are you just focused on the rotation at this point?
You know what? Right now I'm just focused on what I can control. You know, if it comes down to it, and it's whatever, you know, if they need me to do, you know, backflips for them up in the big leagues, I'll do it. You know, if that's going to help them win, you know, if they want me to fetch water, I'll fetch water for them.
No, they got the bat boy to do that.
It's whatever, man. Honestly, you know, once I get up there, it's whatever they need me to do. But as of right now, they got me in a rotation, so I'm going to focus on that and continue to get better. You know, do I want to stay in a rotation? Of course.
Hell yeah.
Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't, you know? But, you know, I can control only a certain amount of things. So
yeah.
I just got to go out there and focus on getting outs, and then whatever's best, whatever they think is best for the team, then you know, I'll you know, face that when it comes.
So there's a lot. So over the last couple of years, baseball, I feel like one big thing is that some people get upset when guys like Bautista or Harper show emotion. If somebody hits a home run off you and then bat flips, are you pissed, or are you just gonna go after him the next time and try and strike him out?
You know, I've been always the type of guy to be competitive. And so I'm definitely gonna try and get him, strike him out the next time I face him. But you know, I've never really been through that situation. And I'm one of those type of pitchers who, you know, I get very emotional when I'm out there on the mound. I'm, you know, super competitive. You know, I hate losing. I hate giving up hits. Hate walking guys. You know, I want to go out there and, you know, get my strikeouts, get outs, and, you know, get through the game. But you know, I haven't been through that situation yet, so I don't really know how I will react, to be honest with you. But you know, definitely, I know if I face that next hitter, if I face that hitter again, then, you know, he's definitely not going to get a hit off me.
He's not going to have a
Then we might have some problems.
Yeah, he's not going to have a comfortable at bat next time.
No.
Well, if you get a big strikeout in a big situation, are you going to? You just said you're emotional. So if you're throwing fist pumps out there, then they have every right to get emotional as well.
Yeah, that's true. But they ain't got the ball in their hands, you know. Everything, you know, I control everything out there on the mound. So, I feel like I can get as hype as I want. But you know, it works both ways, I guess. You've seen it in the WBC. Yep. Guys flipping bats, guys fist pumping. I like that, though. I like that type of baseball. It makes it entertaining.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch. I don't really understand why people get, like, fans and stuff get mad about guys flipping the bats and stuff. I mean, I feel like it's part of the game, but.
And that's the thing. I think a lot of people get bent out of shape for reasons that are unknown. But, you know, I think a lot of the times as well, the Yankee fans are so used to just seeing guys so buttoned up. I mean, we all know about the haircut rules. We know about all the rules that go along with the mm-hmm. Yankees, man. But so I really do hope you keep that emotion and just, you know, show it all the time, because as a fan, I can tell you, especially a lot of the younger fans, I think they really, really appreciate it. And they love seeing the excitement in the game, because you're exactly right. People are trying to take it out.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I don't know why. I like it. You know, I like playing with a little flair, with a little swagger. So, I mean, I think that makes the game fun for me personally.
Yeah,
that's just how I like to play.
Did you like? How was the WBC to you? Marcus Stroman was a guy who gave a little shimmy off the mound. I mean, that was fun to watch. That was fun to watch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like seeing that. I think that's cool. That's awesome. It just switches. It makes it different. It's not, you know, going out there and your typical. You know, throw your pitch, grab the ball, get back on the mound, throw your pitch, grab the ball, get back on the mound, you know, you got to, I feel like it makes the game enjoyable when, you know, guys are out there with a little bit of flair, you know, and showing that their passion, showing the emotion, you know, I think that's why football is such a big watch sport. I mean, not only is it a lot of contact and a lot of excitement, but, you know, those guys are out there, they show emotion when they score a touchdown dances. That's the best. That's one of the best things I like seeing, you know, seeing what Odell Beckham's going to do when he scores a touchdown. I think that's, you know, that's dope. So just makes the game a little more enjoyable.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And I know Scott does too. So, Justice, thanks a lot for joining us. We killed about a half hour of your 5-hour bus trip. What are you going to do for the rest? I hear some guys in the background. What are you guys going to do for the rest of the time?
Probably just play some cards, honestly. Yeah, get on a little card game. So, gonna do that for 4.5 more hours.
All right, man. Nice. Well, we appreciate you joining us. Definitely good luck this season. We're looking forward to watching you. And I know that Trenton Thunder team and the AAA team is stacked. So you guys are gonna have a lot of fun. Hopefully, we see you in Bronx
for sure,
soon.
Man. All right, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.